Item 13, which is open public input. And for those of you who are new to the process, we allow 3 minutes. After 3 minutes, you'll hear a little dinging. And that means you don't have to stop right away, but wrap up your sentence and we'll move on to the next person. I will call you up two at a time. You can both come up and then you can start the testimony. So Sean Cantrell and Ann Schaefer.
Thank you, Acting Chair and other commission members. Sean Cantrell, I'm the Northwest Regional Director for Defenders of Wildlife. I also serve as a member of the Wolf Advisory Group for the department. I'm not speaking on behalf of the WAG. I'm speaking here just for Defenders. I want to share a few observations on the current wolf conservation efforts. First, though, I do take a brief aside and just say I'm really excited that you're out here in Port Angeles and you're going to go visit the Elwha and get a briefing on it. I spent the better part of 2 decades working on that in another life, and so it's something near and dear to me, and so I'm glad that you all are having a chance to see it and hear about it, and I'll be taking along on that field trip. So hope you all have a chance to get out there. On wolves, very big picture, we continue to see very encouraging trends on wolves. So that's great. The number of wolves, individuals, animals, packs, breeding numbers, breeding pairs are all going up. The uptake by livestock producers on non-lethal deterrence, the number of measures they're using, the quality of it, the geographic reach are all expanding and spreading. So that's the really good news. But when you zoom in, there are a number of problems and challenges we are still facing in wolf management. Collectively and individually, we all are falling short. We need to do better. We can and should do better. And so I just wanted to highlight a few areas that I think all the different stakeholders, all the different players, the wolf advocates can and should be doing better, livestock producers, the WAG, the U.S. Forest Service, the legislature, the media, and the department. I think each one of those entities has things that they can and should be doing better, more effectively, more aggressively. There's a variety of things. And in 3 minutes, I can't get into all of them. But I also would note that I would add the commission to that list of entities that can and should do more. You've been supportive of the department on this efforts, and I think that's great. One of the challenges that the department has, obviously, on everything, but on wolves as well, is funding. And a big chunk of the funding for wolves comes from the license point revenue. And my understanding is the department and the commission don't do anything to promote the actual purchase of those by the public. So I would love to see the commission find a way to promote that. It would help wolves, but it would help all of our non-game species work. Having the commission get a briefing from the department of how many get sold, how that works, and finding ways to promote that, because I think it's an opportunity for the general public to support non-game efforts in the state. So that is the pitch of what I'd love to see. You all pitch in on, again, your continued support for the department as a whole would be important as well. Thank you for that. And again, I have a lot more suggestions if you wanted to hear any of those.
Commissioner Baker?
You may be going to ask my question. Can you, without doing all the paragraphs that follow, sort of bullet some of those other things that we should be doing? And are you working these through the WAG as well?
The second question first, no, because the WAG hasn't met since March because we ran out of money and our facilitator went off contract. Hopefully that will be resolved soon. I understand that the department's close to finalizing a contract with Francine to get her back on board for another year and to get the WAG restarted. But yes, I will be bringing them many of these ideas there. Some of the specific things, focusing on the department, I would love to see the department improve on their transparency. It feels as though while there has been some good measures moving forward on having more information about what's going on with wolves on the landscape, positive or negative, it seems that oftentimes over the last year, there's been too little information and it's coming out too late. The department's missed deadlines, self-imposed deadlines of getting information posted to the website. For instance, there's deterrence plans that department staff has spent a huge amount of time and resources coming up on a pack-by-pack basis of, okay, what are the deterrence plans? What are each producer or collectively doing with contract rangerizer, et cetera? We're almost at the end of the 2017 grazing season, and that's when those deterrence plan for the 2017 grazing season will probably be posted, if by then. So it's kind of, you know, day late and dollar short. So those are the sorts of things I think the department can. And again, I realize there's resource challenges. But again, I think there'll be much better receptivity to what the department's doing if the great work that all the staff is doing in conjunction with NGOs, with producers, gets shared with the public beforehand instead of trying to explain after the fact when there's a lethal removal happening or there's depredations happening. To try to explain in the middle of the crisis, it's a whole lot harder than getting that information out up front. Picking on conservation groups like my own, what could we be doing better? There are a lot of times and places where we're good at putting out press releases, but as one of my colleagues in another group said, you know, we need to not just do that, but we need to be putting out range riders. We need to be putting out those dollars. And so, you know, we're scrambling. I just found some extra money in my budget to help bring on a range rider or to extend an existing range rider who's on contract with another group to stay out for the rest of the season because they were at risk of, you know, having to pull off 4 or 5 weeks before the end of the grazing season, and which seems like when we have a whole lot of the conflicts. So those are some examples. Again, producers, there's a number of things. Yeah, I was out in the Sherman Pack territory 2 weeks ago and saw multiple cows in multiple locations where they were not supposed to be. Again, it could be a one-off, but when I saw three different locations where cows were in spots they weren't supposed to be, seems to indicate that they could do a better job of tracking their cows, either the range riders or the ranch hands or somebody doing a better job of having that human presence to make sure that the livestock are staying where they're supposed to be. And also the benefit there is less likely to have conflicts with wolves because the more human presence, the less likely the wolves will be there. So those are some. I have many more. I'm happy to share them, but I will be putting them through the WAG as well.
Other questions? Sean, did I understand your suggestion to the commission to be apply license fees to non-game species?
Yeah, my understanding is that that's where it goes. You know, so if maybe I'm misunderstanding, but a big chunk of the funding for wolf work comes from the license plates. Is that
automobile plates?
Yeah. I don't mean hunting. Okay. Yeah, the car license plates.
Oh, those.
The ones with the pretty pictures of the orca or the eagle. Yeah, no, I don't mean fishing or hunting licenses. Sorry. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. So I'm in a different world. As a non-hunter or fisher, I realize I should speak more clearly when I'm speaking of
licenses. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all.
Anything else?
Okay. So thank you, Sean, I'll call Doug Ahman and Ann.
Yep. Hi. Does this mic work as well?
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Before Sean gets too far away, I do want to bring to your attention, Sean was actually one of what we call the titans on the Elwha. He was one of the first group to actually identify the Elwha Dam Removal Project. So you're in the presence of a great person, and I'm glad to hear he's going to be on the tour. This is my first opportunity to meet him also, although we've worked remotely. So Sean Cantrell, thumbs up. I'm the executive director and lead scientist for the Coastal Watershed Institute, and I also have a PhD in fisheries ecology from the University of Washington. So I work quite a bit with Tom Quinn and with Francis Juanes, a few of the titans of fishery ecology for our region. And in my work with the Coastal Watershed Institute, we're a small place-based 501c3. We're an environmental organization, and we lead much of the work on the Elwha Nearshore, the conservation, the research, the community outreach. So I was really glad to hear that you folks were coming here today. We recently, we work with DFW quite a bit on the Elwha, in particular the Nearshore Habitat Program. Chris Burns is a steadfast supporter and collaborator. He's one of the best biologists in the state, so you're lucky to have him. And then we also work with Mike Gross, who's in your fish management program. And we recently, in the community, were getting a lot of calls about the supporters in the Elwha supporters in the community who are noticing an increase in illegal fishing along the banks of the Elwha. And so we worked with Mike Gross, and what do you know, very quickly we got some signs up that actually provide updated information on the Elwha fishing moratorium. And so I wanted to commend the work of Mike Gross and Fish and Wildlife in responding to that, and also to provide support to the extension of the moratorium. The Elwha is a great project, and the intent is fishing. Nobody is saying that fishing is going to be closed forever, but because it is such a large-scale project, nobody really understood how this was going to play out or how long it was going to take. And that what the fishery quota information or the fish quota information is showing us is that it's going to take a little longer. So we really, we, the community, the Coastal Watershed Institute, as scientists and as community, very much support the moratorium and support the tools that are being used to define when that fishing moratorium will be lifted. And I'll be on the tour as well and can answer if you have any questions about particularly the nearshore element of the project. But that's what I had to say.
Thank you. Questions, commissioners? And we'll have a chance to hear your ear. So, great. Thank you.
All yours. So, before you start, let me see who. Rosemary Dean. And Doug.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Doug Ahman. I'm a local resident of Port Angeles and an avid sports fisherman. Thank you, and welcome to our fair city. Hope you feel welcome here. This is concerning the initial 2018 halibut season schedule proposal, which is currently proposed to allow halibut fishing every Saturday and Sunday in May and the first four weekends in June, which is a 16-day season. There's a one fish daily catch limit and a seasonal bag limit of two halibut. I like this proposal for the direction that it takes us toward a seasonal limit for the first time. We haven't had a seasonal limit before, but I think that's a good thing. And it will give anglers more days in which to meet this seasonal limit. As a halibut fisherman, I'd like to see a season of the same length, but the fishing days are not restricted to just weekends. The reason would be to reduce fishing pressure on the popular weekends and allow fishermen to fish on the less crowded weekdays. This would also give fishermen the ability to choose better and safer fishing conditions when the weather and tides are more favorable. I also think that a three-fish seasonal limit would be more acceptable to halibut anglers. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions? We appreciate it. We've had some good input on halibut, so thank you for coming. And I will call Ed Bowen. Rosemary.
Thank you for being here. It's wonderful to be able to have the opportunity to voice my concern for an issue regarding safety. And I'm talking about the use of modern firearms in the residential areas around here. It used to be that in the areas from, say, the Elwha River mouth to the Dungeness, the north side of Highway 101, there was archery only or shotguns. Now, in the recent past, there's been the use of modern firearms, centerfire weapons, modern muzzle loaders. So I'm just wanting to make that known that that it really is a safety issue. If you could consider banning the use of centerfire weapons and muzzle loaders and putting back to just archery in residential areas, it would be certainly worthy of your consideration.
Thank you. Any questions, commissioners?
This is in regard to game management unit, unit 624.
64.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Doesn't appear to be any questions. Okay, so I think you bring us to a close, Ed.
Ed Bowen, I'm a West End resident, Lake Ozette specifically. It's been a long time since I've been before you because I can't make the trip all the way to Olympia. So this is real nice you came up here today. With the timing opportunity that you're going out to see the LWOD today, I'd like to throw a little piece in there that maybe you're not quite aware of, but you play in a very important role. And that's in the federally owned LWOD project lands. These were a little over 1,100 acres that were acquired during the restoration acquisition process. And in the public law, I've got the map of all the project lands. And in the law of 1992 that gave the secretary the authority to do this, the Congress hinted at the fact about the need to dispose of these lands once the project is complete and gave four options. One of those options I want to make sure you're aware of is specifically spelled out to the effect of use and development by the state of Washington, specifically in the law, one of the four options. This has never really gained ground on how it's going to happen. I want to bring it to your attention because years ago, I brought it to Fish and Wildlife's attention. Were they taking the lead on this interest as a state representative? And the Region 6 management said, yes, we are the lead. We are representing the state on this matter. But all these years have gone by now, and the public up here, at least, were not aware of Fish and Wildlife ever taking any action. To the point that a report required by Congress dated January 1994 addressed this disposition issue specifically, and Fish and Wildlife did not comment or represent in this at all. DNR informally commented no interest, informally. So this is a matter I bring to your attention because basically for the federal government's purpose, these lands are now ready to be considered for disposition. They're actually going through a similar process with WASDOT, Washington State Department of Transportation, in the new construction of the LWA Highway 101 bridge, which are going to go across these project lands. So WASDOT's already in the middle of it. I would suggest in your tour today you take this in consideration because there's 1,100 acres of prime land, which includes 3.73 acres of Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife lands already owned within the project lands. But you take a trip out there and take a look at the old Lake Allwell boat launch, which is high and dry now. And I would say this because if the Fish and Wildlife is a representative for the state, make it publicly known and let the public know that you are the process for whether the state has an interest or not. And secondly, you do need to address, if you're not going to be, what are you going to do about these lands that you do own that are already embedded within these project lands? Thank you.
Commissioners, any questions?
Yes,
Commissioner Kehoe.
Thanks for bringing this to our attention. I mean, you're very timely as we're here and going to be touring the facility. As you probably know, I don't know if you were here this morning, but you know the department is pretty constrained in terms of its resources. Money's tight, and I'm certainly no expert on this, but I do know that there's been several land transactions where the department has been involved in partnerships with, say, groups with the Nature Conservancy and others. Are you aware of any kind of dialogue or if any of these groups might have an interest in helping secure financing for this purpose?
So let me hit on this a little bit. You actually create a little bit of a Pandora's box here. The federal government right now does not know how to take this action. That's my opinion. They don't know how to dispose of these lands. And never was intent in the legislation for this to be a financial transaction. it would be either a wildlife refuge, a national park, tribal interest, state use and development. And that created a cloud. How do they transfer these lands now? And that's what the Park Service, in their defense, is having a problem with right now. They don't know how to do it. My opinion is this is going to have to go back before Congress for them to spell out how to dispose of these lands, whether it's just an outright handover to the state or whether, I believe, after reading the report, I think it's going to be a multiplex of different ownerships. Because the report, it was left in the gray on what to do. And it kind of hinted at the fact that maybe certain aspects of these lands need to do certain things. And I think you're going to see, and it could possibly be that NGOs become a part of this, but that's not in the legislation. I don't think this is an outright, very strongly don't believe this is an outright cost to the state to do this. These are significant orders of the state. It's still in the RCW, Lake Allwell is, under the Shoreline Management Act. So I think you have a charge, but I don't think you have a financial obligation in at least showing an interest. That's my suggestion to you. I would suggest someone at the state needs to at least express an interest in what to do about these lands and go on public record to say that we are, it's going to be Fish and Wildlife, great. If it's going to be the governor's office, great. If it's going to be DNR, great. But again, my history in this over the years has been the Region 6 management said we are the ones responsible for representing the state on this, and we never heard anything. So I'm leaving that.
Thank you. Yes, Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you speak again to the deadline and the mechanism for which interest would be expressed?
The mechanism, again, the WASDOT example is the best example. They need to build a new alignment of the bridge, which would go over these lands. Typically, they would go to the federal government and ask for a transfer of ownership. But the Park Service, who's the manager of this, has said that's the law is already allowing us to dispose of these lands to you. We just don't know how to do it. They've submitted to their solicitor at the DOI, Department of Interior, and they've had it in their hands for a year and a half now and still don't know how to do it. So again, that's where I draw my conclusion that how to do it will wind up going back to the Congress to determine how to do this, because I don't think the executive branch of the federal government can figure it out right now. As far as, what was the second part?
Deadline.
There is no deadline other than it's clearly identified in the 1992 law that once the emphasis of the restoration is complete, which the Park Service for that purpose has said we've met that point, then it's time to do this. There is no deadline, but again, as a member of the public, it's already been how many years? And am I going to wait more years with a Fish and Wildlife boat launch that is not usable for whatever purpose other than a parking lot to go walk on these lands? What's the future for Fish and Wildlife for those lands? So that, as a public interest, the deadline is, I do have a deadline. I want this done probably. In my world, living with this, I would say in a five-year window, we should have a good answer on what we want to do. And I think that's reasonable given with what my experience with Olympic National Park has been.
Anything else, commissioners? Thank you both. So that brings public input to a close.